Yo, yo, it's your boy Derek here at the Weekly Pools. I'm here with my co-hosts at the Tevin minus the I and at Z13, Ricky Z. What's up, guys?
Hey, good morning. Good morning.
It's a beautiful Saturday, 9 a.m.
Was that Ricky's enthusiastic intro?
Sorry, let me try again.
Morning, yay!
You know, it's raw, unedited here, so you got to be on it.
So we have a really good friend of ours who has inboxed us one of his comics. This is our first interview with all three of us together. We are joined here by Jake Cohen.
Good morning, all. Thank you for the invite. Great to be here on this fine summer morning.
That's right.
We're happy to have you, buddy.
Look at this guy. All this See,
that's how you open, Ricky. That's how you open.
Give him my best Stan Lee Carnival Barker imitation there.
You guys like Jake so much, why don't you just have him do it?
I don't want to cause a riff this early on.
We mentioned firing you on the last pod because of your basketball.
Maybe Ricky, your job is on the line.
Jake likes. Jake, do you like basketball?
Yeah, I'm a big Syracuse Orange fan. I don't know if you guys follow college ball.
Okay, NCAA, yeah.
And, I'm
a long-suffering Knicks fan. They haven't been good since I was, like, 12 years old, so.
Uh-huh, yeah, my in-laws are the Knicks fans.
Yeah, New York born and raised, so.
You know, I'll take a Knicks fan over a Harden fan, so. Ricky, this might be it, buddy.
Yeah. I didn't say I was still a Harden fan. You guys are mean. It's fine. I'd replace me with Jake too. He seems really cool, and he's all positive and happy. Look at him.
Oh, the positive happiness is like complete facade. Cool with that. If you're cool with the artifice, yeah, I'm your guy.
All right,
you got to start out strong. Yeah.
So Jake, you and Raymond, you guys are working on Astounding Tales.
Yep.
So what role do you play with the comic? Are you the artist or do you write?
I'm the writer. So the kind of original, like, genesis of the story or the idea is 2000 AD. I don't know if you're familiar. They take a four-page – they call Future Shock submission. So basically like a four-pager where something kind of weird, like a Twilight Zone type twist at the end. So I submit periodically. None have been successfully published thus far. But towards the beginning of the public pandemic, rather, they post that they're no longer taking submissions and for the Future Shocks. And I already had this four pager and I kind of liked it. So got in touch with Ray on the subreddit Comic Book Collabs. He enjoyed the script. I commissioned him to write the four pages. He really dug it, so much so that he actually expanded to five pages. He threw in a splash page for free. We dug working with each other. So we said, hey, why not kind of this issue, this five pager can be like an issue zero. Why don't we do an issue one, like a full 24 pages in color? Ran a Kickstarter, knock on wood. Odin bless us. Praise Oprah and baby Jesus. We were successful. And here we are, me talking to you guys, trying to promote the thing.
That's right. So I saw that it got fully backed, correct?
Yeah, that is correct. In March.
That's awesome. I love it when these comics meet their goals, and you know, just to see the community reach out and support. You know, it's awesome.
If you want to start heading to print like real soon, like in the next like week or two. So pretty much done. Issue one's gonna be shipping soon, and we're pretty locked in for we're issue two. You know, we got I'm already writing issue three, so the script for issue two is done. So shortly, you know, we're getting the ball rolling here on issue two. So it's pretty exciting.
There you go. So does this Astounding Tales pick up anything from any of your previous submissions, or is this like a whole fresh story?
Whole fresh story. Part of the impetus also was at the start of the pandemic, I was reading Kirby King of Comics by Mark Evanier. And it just really inspired me also to do like an earnest take on the genre because given my age, I was born in 1983. You know, I'm 38 right now. So in terms of comics I read growing up, especially like superhero comics, they're very much like that deconstructionist take, like Frank Miller, Alan Moore, like dark.
Preach.
So, you know, that's kind of the comics I always are immersed in. And I thought, like, hey, like, let's do start of the Silver Age, just really taking a lack of a better word, you know, don't want to overuse it too much, but an earnest take on the genre, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Are we going to get more of the Robot Girl?
Oh, 100%, 100%. So, yeah.
Yes.
We got all kinds.
Billy?
You know, both organic and non-organic in nature. So we like to play with that too. Kind of in the same way that kind of early Marvel comics were dealing with the nuclear age. Obviously, for 2021, it wouldn't be the same. It wouldn't be a one-to-one. It wouldn't be an apples to apples. But I feel kind of playing with the information age. What does it mean to be human? Those are kind of the ideas that are kind of more of the 2021 version of that.
Nice. Do you guys want to rotate through questions, like, you know, Derek, Tevin,
say,
me, or what?
I was gonna say, Ricky, you go ahead. It seems like me and Tevin's asked all the questions. Ricky, you go ahead for one.
Hey, you guys are what the people pay for, man. So, just something that you just brought up, Jake, made me think: are these stories, the astounding tales stories, are they going to be some self-contained, or is it going to be a continuous thing that involves Billy as your protagonist?
So in terms of, it is going to have like an ongoing story arc, but in the same vein of kind of big two superhero comics, that it is kind of perpetual second act, also in the same vein of a kind of a pre-trade paperback world, where yes, these are continuing plot threads. These are continuing basically kind of superhero genre, very similar to soap opera in that regard, especially, you know, I was definitely reared on Claremont's X-Men. So in the same vein that, yes, you could pick up an issue in the idea of like every comic is someone's first comic, and like, yes, this is a self-contained, you will get, you know, a full story arc, you know, beginning, middle, end. But at the same time, it's comics and it's kind of perpetual soap opera. So there will be threads and storylines going through where if you stay on board, it will be a very satisfying read. But on the other hand, you know, it's one contained, you know, every issue, you'll get a full story. Because I feel nowadays a lot of people are writing to the trade paperback, where when you pick up an issue, it is not a, you know, complete story.
Right. So, yeah. Five or six deep.
Maybe old man,
you know,
yelling at clouds, but that's kind of how
it. Yeah.
No, so for the listener to clarify, if I can, it sounds like.
Sure.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
Please.
Sometimes with any Kickstarter campaign, it can be difficult to find one of the issues you're missing, especially as they get further down. So these, for the listeners, they could pick up really any one issue, be satisfied, and then if they get more, they're gonna have some bonus.
Yeah, and issue, if they're interested, obviously if they order the copy of issue zero, it's a much better resolution quality, they can get a print copy, you know, all the bells and whistles. But if they just want to check out issue zero, they want to see the initial five pager, they can go to funnyfigs.com/astounding and they could check out the five pager, that's issue zero, kind of right there, to kind of see if it's their Jimmy Jam, you know, if it blows their hair Jimmy back.
Well, I'm going to be honest here. I mean, this was a great read. I mean, everything pops here. I mean, I like the lettering and the art style. So shout out to Ray on that. And then, I mean, your writing, it just, the way it flows is phenomenal.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, Ray is amazing. He's fantastic. So I can't speak highly enough. Especially, you know, he's a one man show. He's doing the inking, he's doing the lettering, he's doing the coloring. You know,
like when I looked at it, it gave me like the color and like just like the palette he's using. It kind of reminded me of like when I'm looking at it on my phone, it felt like a newspaper. You know what I mean? It looked like a newspaper comic, and I thought that was super freaking sick.
Well, aesthetically, we're both, again, you know, maybe showing my age. I'm a little older than Ray, but both of us have an affinity for kind of that newsprint aesthetic. Kind of before they went to the nice glossy paper. Because I guess objectively speaking, the better paper is probably better. But, you know, whether it's nostalgia or whatever, you know, I love the look of newsprint. I like the smell of old comics, like yep. I like in a comic book store, that weird old paper yes. smell.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like the way you think, Jake. I like your vibes, man.
Yeah.
No, I think that was one of my notes. Tevin, you know, we're just sharing brainwaves, man. One of the notes I had was that just the art style and the color, kind of back into what Derek was saying too, it gives it kind of that old school vibe. And, you know, for me, you mentioned Frank Miller and newsprint, and this is like the stuff that I was raised on. Well, raised on Frank Miller's a stretch. Dad said no for a little while. And then, but yeah, that retro kind of energy, especially with a title like Astounding Tales, it makes me think old school, having the Amazing Fantasy 15 little homage on the cover, which I think was for number one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like just seeing that, I'm never going to frown on an Amazing Fantasy shout cover. You know, I'm always into that little homage that people do. And it just seems like you guys show your influence, but also it fits the genre of this kind of like you said, like Twilight Zone-y kind of fantasy, interesting, weird stuff. I think it looks better in newsprint. I think that's cooler.
Yeah, definitely in terms of just weird ideas, concepts, and even more so in issue one, kind of having that breakneck pace of characters, concepts, like a big inspiration in terms of the kind of pacing of the story is the Galactus trilogy and Raiders of the Lost Ark. Not really in terms of content, but again, the idea of just a breakneck kind of breathless pace of like characters, ideas, concepts, and just kind of going for it, you know, just kind of like a sprint. Because, I mean, you look at that Galactus trilogy, you know, the amount of stuff that is just thrown in there for the first time is like every two pages is just like, you know, this, you know, crazy, you know, IP and content. So that's kind of the inspiration in terms of constant, you know, feeding the reader. Here's a character, here's an idea. And then and the same thing goes into issue two, so kind of the idea of, and also a big inspiration since I was a child. I'm sure a lot of you guys had the same experience. When you first hear A New Hope and Obi-Wan mentions the Clone Wars, you're like, Clone Wars? What the hell's a Clone War? And like, and I actually envisioned when I was 6 years old, like, oh, like clones of Jedis. Like they're fighting, like someone made an evil clone. But nonetheless, I digress, that the idea of just like when you see things that you don't need to over-explain them and it implies a bigger world. So we try to do that too, where you get like kind of a taste or a hint at something and kind of your headcanon kind of fills in the rest.
Yeah.
Deal.
I love that. Yeah. I love when I'm given something and then I can make up my own story behind it. It's great.
Well, from my perspective, again, it's the idea of it creates a bigger world. Sometimes when you over-explain things you know, sometimes when prequels kind of like try to explain everything in kind of one shot, so like characters are kind of meeting each other right away, that it again, makes the universe smaller.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, life doesn't happen like that. Like you don't meet like every friend, like not everything crazy that happens to you all happens in one day. That's like
that's
not
right,
life works, you know?
Yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I want to know. So, like, anybody out there listening that watched the Indie Spotlight video that I made featuring Astounding Tales number 0 saw this sweet-ass giant mud turtle? Oh, yeah, dude. Absolutely. Like, I showed this giant mud turtle. I'm calling it a mud turtle.
Oh, my gosh. That thing's so cool.
So, are we going to get more giant monsters? Is there going to be, like, a whole family of these things?
Issue 1 has more giant robots, and kind of like sci-fi kind of Kirby designs, maybe a little bit of an homage to Extinction Agenda, Cameron Hodge in there. In terms of issue 1, one of the things, like, I do write like a panel break, like I wouldn't say I write full script. It's more along the lines actually of like what a screenplay would look like, a film screenplay, in terms of like I'm not telling him where to place the quote unquote camera. And basically, like, if I'm specific about something, like, you know, but Ray's pretty good about you know, following the specificity. That being said, that monster, I was not specific. I just said, you know, kind of what caused the monster, and then, like, hey, I just need, like, a big kaiju. I just need something to destroy the city.
And dude, I love that.
And frankly, you know, I think one of the things in my writing that I think is a positive, or kind of where we gel, is that I give him plenty of spots in the script where this is kind of your end of the things. You take the ball and you run with it. So that was definitely that kaiju design. That's all him. And there was a number of them. There was also like a giant salamander that I thought was pretty cool.
Oh, cool.
But the tortoise was awesome. And in the issue zero, if you like the print copy, and then I guess also the digital copy, you'll have a bunch of his kind of like materials, kind of pre-production kind of design materials and things like that. Like we included like a small fraction of like my stuff, because it's really, it's just kind of my weird notes and like script, like it's not that exciting, but like his like stuff, like his pre-production is awesome. So there's like a bunch of that content that's actually like fun and exciting to look at, instead of being like, I wrote this on Word doc, or I did this on Final Draft. You know, like, so that stuff is definitely cool to check out.
I thought that turtle kaiju thing was awesome. That is another note.
Oh,
I didn't, when I was reading it the first time, I didn't expect a giant mud turtle.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know, like, well, you had the toxic stuff in the going into Lake Erie, and I'm like, what's going to happen? And then that thing came out, and that panel where it showed kind of zoomed in on his mouth and jaw area.
Yes.
Was so cool. So
detailed.
It's so great. Big. Like, that turtle is like, he could swallow anything.
Yeah, he does a really great job in terms of like the scale. Yes. The other thing I think he does a fantastic job of, which is kind of, I think, fairly unique in superhero comics, is children look like children, and teenagers look like teenagers. Like oftentimes you'll see like they just look like small adults, or especially like they look almost like too kind of almost over sexualized or whatever. Yeah. Like, you know, so you could read like an old school issue of New Mutants, and like you're like, does Eliana, is that like supposed to be a 14-year-old girl? Because I don't know.
Yeah, that's 25. That's
exactly. Right. So I think she does a great job of, is that the children look like children, the teenagers look like teenagers. Yeah.
Billy's design. Do you have kids? If I can ask that.
No, Ray does actually. Ray does.
So like, I have an 11-year-old daughter. And I felt like as I was reading the book before they really disclosed that Billy was 12, as I'm reading through it, I'm like, oh, she's like a grade school age kid. I thought like maybe middle school or younger. So like you said, obviously, however Ray's laying these characters out, it looks good. It's like you said, more in the 90s, I felt like a lot of people went over detailed to the point where these little people, like they were tiny little adults. Well,
it was just weird. I was going to say, I think the interesting, if you look at, I don't read a tremendous amount of it. It's just pretty much kind of when they cross over with the X-Men. But like Power Pack issues, I think, are fascinating in that way. Yeah. Sometimes there'll be an artist and you're like, oh, these are children. And then it could be and sometimes it could be like a carnival tribe of little people. Like, you're not sure.
Yeah, you can't tell.
Yeah. So I think that's like the best example of like people want to check out like some Marvel comics of where you'll see that phenomena of, are these kids, are they supposed to be 10 or just like a 3 foot size, you know, 40-year-old?
That's right.
Well, and even the dialogue used, I wrote just that Billy came off to me as like an innocent, nice kid. And that little line, that you're my best friend line, after they've known each other for like 10 minutes. It fits how 10 to 12 year old kids, they are like that, especially like the nicer, more innocent kids that have less life experience, or however you want to put it. They're just being themselves. And I felt like the dialogue and the character design made it very clear without you having to say their age, how old she was. It really jived really well.
I really like Jack too, dude.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely one of my favorite characters, even though he's a non-powered character. He's actually a little bit of an homage to Jack Kirby. So that's kind of why we made him a Honduran American. Czech. His parents were Eastern European Jewish immigrants. So that was, in terms of the immigrant experience or population of the day of the early 20th century, that historically it makes perfect sense. Like, that's when a lot of European Jewish immigrants were coming to America and coming to the Lower East Side of New York. So kind of imagining again, like, what would be the modern iteration of that? Oh, let's have them from, you know, Central or South America. And so I was like, oh, let's have him be a Honduran American, because, again, kind of representing Jack's background as an immigrant, as the son of immigrants. I thought this would kind of be the idea of the 2021 version of that.
Yeah, that's really cool. I like that. Yeah, that's super cool. Smart thinking. And I liked I liked his shirt.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Shout out to the thing, Homage. That's
right. Well, see, I had a couple of questions I was going to ask you about, because we're going with the character names here. Is Billy inspired by somebody? And then I saw that, you know, you had the Gene Roddenberry Middle School. Is that a shout out to Star Trek?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, 100%? like things that, like, since I was 6 years old that I've loved. It's like comics, Star Wars, and then Star Trek. Because Nickelodeon used to rerun both the cartoon, the animated cartoon, and TOS. And then also, that's like, I was a kid, like, right in the heart of, like, TNG, you know? So I was getting, like, all that Star Trek when I was a kid. So, like, Gene Roddenberry, and then also the movies. Like, I still remember being probably around 7 or 8 and not getting to see Undiscovered Country in the theater. It's still something I'm annoyed about. Take me to the movie theater. So, like, Gene Roddenberry is definitely, like, an important part just of kind of who I am and, like, my politics, my morals, my ethics, kind of stuff like that. So if anyone kind of has a problem with me being, like, kind of like a humanist or kind of, like, progressive or liberal or whatever, like, it's all Gene Roddenberry.
We know who to blame. Yeah, we know who to blame.
Yeah.
So are there other, like, small pop culture things that you're going to throw in there from your childhood into your comics? You're just going to sneak them into the background?
Oh, 100%. Like, yeah, 100%. If you read my writing, it's very obvious what I like. Kind of my perspectives on kind of life. Like, for example, the turtle in issue 0, that's the result. There's a deep oil drilling off the coast of Cleveland, which is actually true. They in the Great Lakes, they do dig for oil. Yep. So and we do know that sometimes accidents happen with these oil drilling. So again, the idea of 1961, the start of Marvel Comics, the nuclear age, everyone gets powers instead of cancer from, you know, radiation in early Marvel Comics. That's a very 50s, 60s, Cold War, the nuclear age, 2021. You know, we have other problems, you know, the results of kind of digging for fossil fuels and stuff like that. So instead of Gamma causing Bruce Banner, you know, trying to get fossil fuels out of the ground, causes a turtle to, you know, destroy downtown Cleveland till a 12-year-old girl is able to save the day.
That's right. So where did you come up with the name Billy? Is that just something you settled on?
Well, actually, to tell you the truth, I have a lot of trouble with names. So I borrow names from people I know. And Billy or William, so obviously the IE is the female, you know, iteration, but I had a very close friend, Billy or William, growing up, so I just used that name a lot, and both the male, you know, his name is Billy, or the female iteration, it gets just used a lot, because he's a dear friend of mine, and he passed away when I was 20 years old, so a name gets used a lot. Sorry to bring it down.
No, you're good.
No, that's totally cool, man.
Yeah.
First names, last names will be of people I know. Sometimes it will be like in issue 1, there's a guy, Agent Witz, who's my buddy, Rob Chykwitz. Like, the things he says are like, if you knew him, you're like, oh, those are weird idiosyncratic things about this dude. Other times it's just borrowing a name, you know?
Yeah. Okay. I got you there.
I thought you were like a Billie Eilish fan or Billie Jean fan or something.
Billie Jean.
I'm
Billie Idol.
You know, as
that's a different Billy.
Deep into pop culture, like, I'm starting to age out of contemporary pop culture. So once in a while, I need to call up, like, a friend who's got a kid like, you know, to ask them, like, hey, is this something kids would say? Like, what do kids listen to? Like, whatever. You know, like, you're talking about, like, posters for Billy's wall. And I'm like, well, she's like a 12-year-old girl. Like, maybe like a Bikini Kill poster or something like that. And
what does that even mean?
Yeah, he's like, I don't think 12-year-old girls nowadays, like, this is not 1994. Like, they're not listening to that, you know?
No, I can't even. I, at work, anytime I'm dealing with, like, the newer 20-year-old people, I'll, like, say stuff deliberately to bother them. Like, I'll make up hip slang terms that are clearly not, and I'll be like, yeah, that's what you're supposed to say, right? And then they're like, what? And it drives them nuts. I say, well, like, I already say, like, rad and groovy all the time, and then, like, they'll come into my office, and I'm like, oh, is that lit? Is that, am I using that right? And then they're like, oh, my gosh, it's so fun.
Well, I had the weird experience yesterday of, you know, whenever I hear a crowd roar, I always reference the joke from The Simpsons. Are they saying Boo Burns or Boo Earns? And everyone knows, you know, what I'm talking about. I had a coworker who straight up, he told me, he's like, what is that? What are you saying? And I explained to him the reference. He's like, oh, I'm 24. I don't know The Simpsons that well. I'm starting to catch up on them. And that's never happened to me. Like, I'm starting, yeah, like, definitely starting to date myself with the references.
You're like a Ralph on the bus. I'm in danger.
I hope you don't take this the wrong way. Some people get weird when I say their work reminds me of stuff.
I was reminded. If it's good or bad stuff, it reminds
you. It's good. I think it's good. This reminded me of Astro Boy. Not the whole story, just the one moment when the dad was explaining, you know, how she came to be. I was like, oh, died, brought back, Astro Boy.
So I've gotten that comment before. I'm familiar with Astro Boy. I have read Astro Boy manga and seen a little bit of Astro Boy content. Like, I think they even had, like, an American movie a few years ago. It's just one of those pop culture things that, like, even if someone would be familiar with the iconography, like, even if you weren't someone who's into, like, cartoons and comics and manga and anime, like, people be like, oh, I've seen that or heard the name Astro Boy. So it's definitely something that, while not, like, a huge influence and definitely not, like, kind of something consciously, when you're kind of working with robots, little kid robots, like Mega Man, Astro Boy, like, it's just
Mega Man.
It's just going to kind of be in the soup, because, again, it's just permeated pop culture to the extent where it's just kind of it's in there floating around. Like, you can't get away from it unless you actively try to be like, I'm disassociating and, you know, whatever.
It got me thinking, like, because I didn't read. I mean, I've read some Astro Boy, but only after I saw the movie, which was deeply intense by my expectations going. I'm like, oh, cutesy, fun kids movie. Oh, it's so sad. When reading through this, it got me thinking, what were your inspirations, motivations for this book? Obviously, we've talked a little bit about it, but do you have anything we haven't covered yet?
Well, Fantastic Four, you know, Kirby and Lee's run on that. Some other inspirations were kind of like Ghost in the Shell, just the idea of, like, what does it mean to be human, kind of prosthetic body.
Yeah, I love Ghost in the Shell.
Just kind of the whole, like, in terms of storytelling, a lot of times it's what I do is almost like data chunking. You know, I'm taking kind of the different tropes of the genre and just kind of, you know, throwing them all in the soup. So that's definitely kind of, it's more so in terms of the genres we're working with. So it's kind of sci-fi, also superhero, because I'm a believer superhero is a distinct genre. You know, comic books are a medium, movies are a medium, superheroes are a genre. So to me, science fiction and so superheroes can have elements of sci-fi, but they are two different genres. So sci-fi, superhero, just Star Trek in terms of, like, we're talking about the things that, like, we're using allegory. But, you know, if you're reading this comic, you kind of, my thoughts on things are pretty evident. You know, we kind of put things on Front Street. Claremont's X-Men, in terms of like the especially kind of the narration and the purple prose, that is 100% like my inner Claremont going there.
Nice.
So those are kind of like the big influences on just kind of the influences on this work are kind of the things that just influence me in general. And, you know, so definitely.
Well, I don't want to steal any more thunder from Derek and Tevin here, but I'm guessing.
No, buddy, you go ahead, segue, man.
Another question I had was, you know, if you could name like your top 3 to 5 creators that have influenced you. And I'm already guessing Miller, Kirby, Claremont, but can you speak to that a little?
Sure. So, I mean, I love like the work like of like kind of most people. I don't think this is gonna be crazy to say Alan Moore, but I wouldn't say he's as much of an influence as much of like, wow, it's like a level of like, I can't like, that's just a whole nother ball of wax. So I would not necessarily call him an influence, but it's definitely comics I love, you know, like I could never like the level of detail of something like Watchmen, like, it's one of those things that maybe musicians have that, you know, experience where you see someone like play an instrument to the extent you're like, I can't even like, or maybe Michael Jordan dunking a basketball. Like, there's no way, you know, I could dribble and get as proficient as I want at certain aspects of the game, but I'm not going to soar through the air like that. Like, that's a whole nother ball of wax. But 100% Claremont's X-Men, you know, I'm the right age where X-Men were huge, but also in terms of early 90s and the availability of trade paperbacks, that there was always like, hey, you got these Lobdell comics, but like, oh, this is like the good shit, like the Claremont comics. And then, yeah, totally just the 100% Kirby in terms of the idea of just like breadth of ideas and concepts. Frank Miller, definitely, I remember, is very of being a little kid and being in like a Barnes & Noble or a Walden Books, again, to like date myself, and read the trade paper, Dark Knight Returns, and like my brain like exploding. Because also, as a little kid, like in a in the nascent internet era of like, it's all about like headcanon and kind of trying to piece these continuities together. And I've always been like a continuity head. So the idea of like, oh, this is like an old Batman, and like, oh, like, and trying to like piece together how this evolution, and that's probably my love of X-Men comics too, is like you're dropped into this like vast continuity and you're just like, how does this work and how does this connect? And then who else would be kind of like I guess Neil Gaiman is huge. I would say, you know, I guess it's kind of popular these days to kind of like poo-poo kind of Stan. He kind of was a little bit of a credit hog. You know, there's justified criticism. I don't want to get into that, but I think also in terms of Kirby and Ditko's work, I think sometimes like someone who is an editor and like, you know, while he may have not in the end, like maybe creator is kind of a little bit of a stretch of some of the works that was really kind of Jack going and doing his thing and coming back. But I think his contribution, when you look at kind of the pre and post Marvel work of both Ditko and Kirby, that Lee did add something to that stew.
Absolutely,
is critical, even though kind of currently it is kind of popular to kind of, you know,
it's more popular for people who didn't read the work too. I mean, that's the thing. Like a lot of, not to go off on him, but the way he wrote that soap opera style. And, you know, a lot of the stuff that those guys did, Ditko, Kirby, Lee, that era, I mean, it's hard to deny the influence.
Well, especially Ditko and his – I don't want to get too political, but Ditko had his own idiosyncratic ideology. Yeah. And I think if he was left to his own devices, Spider-Man would have been a different thing. Like, it wouldn't be like, you know, with great power comes great responsibility, being like, you owe it to your community, is kind of like a left wing thing, that if you have power bestowed upon you, you owe it to your community to help them out, even though in Peter Parker's life, it's often screwing up his life. I feel like Steve Ditko is kind of more of like a libertarian right wing like ideology, like he wouldn't be down with that as much. Like, Lee added a lot there to kind of how we view kind of Spider-Man. I think that can't be understated. You know, if you look at like Mr. A and like a lot of Ditko's work, I think Lee's kind of point of view helped kind of smooth out some of kind of, again,
yeah, the balance,
idiosyncratic kind of perspective on life.
Can I talk about Frank Miller real fast?
Oh, sure, please. I would love to talk
about Frank Miller.
So, real quick, like, my quick little, like, epiphany I had. As a kid, I watched the Big Guy and Rusty cartoon a lot.
Okay.
And I didn't know it was a comic, and, like, Frank Miller was totally on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Does Billy have a little bit of Rusty the Boy Robot in her?
It's definitely, again, the idea of, like, Astro Boy. Again, that's not as popular, like, kind of an iconography or a piece of IP. But I was a little older when that cartoon came out, but still of the age where I'm watching cartoons. And it was definitely floating around in the subconscious, in the back of my brain. So it wasn't necessarily, like, an active thing of, like, I'm homaging this. But yeah. It can't help, but like it's obviously in there. And I think that's a lot of times when you're working in genre, like from what's the Warlord of Mars, the whatever his name is, John Carter, like stuff that or even, you know, it happens with Dune, where there will be kind of a current iteration of something. And then, like, the John Carter Warlord of Mars movie, you'll be like, oh, this seems like so much other things I've seen before. This is, like, a ripoff. This is hacky. But it's the other way around. It's that was the precursor. And it's just so much kind of in that genre and influencing the genre that it's just kind of in there. So the Rusty Boy Robot is kind of a similar thing that it's influenced kind of that genre. So it's kind of organically kind of in there because it's kind of it's added its own spice to the stew, so it's, like, in there now. And I think and Dune's, like, another example of that. I'm sure people, when they see the Dune movie, are going to be like, this is ripping off a bunch of stuff from Star Wars. Well, no, actually, it's George Lucas borrows stuff from Frank Herbert, you know, so it's kind of like that idea. Sometimes things influence a genre, and they're just kind of in there now. And so when you're exposed to them, you're like, oh, that's from that, you know what I mean, kind of deal? I don't know.
Yeah, for sure.
And popularity definitely plays a big role in that.
Oh, for sure. Definitely. I only had two more things, and then if you guys just want to dump whatever you got on him.
Please dump. Dump away.
Okay, I'll go. Well, you already said you're from New York, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That was one of my questions. Oh, Long Island. Okay.
Long Beach, New York. I was born and raised in Merrick. Same town as Amy Fisher. I don't know if anyone remembers the Long Island Lolita. She's from Merrick, New York. And Lindsay Lohan. Those are the popular...
Yay, wild Lindsay.
Those are the popular American...
Specifically Herbie era.
Herbie era. God.
My other one, my only other thing is probably better for like towards the end. Mm-hmm. So I can shut up for a bit. If you guys want to come back to me.
All right. Well, I think you hit most of my stuff because we went there for a while and a lot of my questions were already answered. And, you know, I encourage everyone because you have you want to plug your issue zero again? Where can we find that?
I would love to plug. Issue zero, and you could also get on our mailing list and stuff like that, is funnyfigs.com/astounding. And then in terms of if you want the links to like pre-order issue one, issue zero, we got merch as well. You can get that on either mine or Ray's social media. So I'm at Jake Scott Cohen and Ray's at Funny Figs on Twitter. And there's also at Astounding Tales on Twitter. So that you'll get the link to pre-order. You get pins, all designed by Ray, the electric cart logo on the T-shirt, on the pins, and, of course, issue one and issue zero.
Party.
Definitely.
So actually,
everyone's invited to the party. Party at the pit. Everyone gets laid.
Yes.
What if you're married?
Bring your wife.
What if you're married?
Yeah.
What was that?
Are you still invited? If you're married, are you still invited?
Oh, 100%. We can do a fishbowl party if you want. We can just everyone's key car keys in the fishbowl.
There you go.
At the car keys. That's what you're going home with. You know,
just give me a 30 rack of PBR.
If you're serving punch at this party, I might just walk right around and leave. I don't know about drinking the punch.
Punch in a fishbowl. Well, that's trouble.
The thing is, you know, there'll be like adults punch and then children's punch, and never the twains shall meet. You
but
know?
We're never punching the
if
children.
If you're at like a hippie party or something, or if there's like a lot of Grateful Dead music, and you see like two different punches, make sure you know which punch you're drinking, because you know you may be going on a little bit of a trip. You know what I mean?
Oh no. since you plug, I'll say my thing then, because then I can be done bothering everybody. Since you're plugging everything, giving out your Twitter handles, I was curious. Don't want to put you on the spot too much. Do you have a one-line pitch that you can give the listeners so that they can be like, oh, dang, that sounds awesome. Obviously, it sounds amazing because of how we talked about it already. But do you have like a one-line pitch or like a brief, short, maybe one or two sentence hook the reader pitch?
Love letter to Silver Age comics of the works of Stan and Jack.
Boom.
Shakalaka.
Yeah, I definitely like, you know, now that we mentioned it and you know we're kind of here, I have some old comics from my dad that I got from him, and it was during that era, and you know, just everything just fits just like that. So I'm gonna say it's definitely, that sentence is spot on. I mean, it just looks and it reads, it's a great book. Yeah. I
we don't make the news, we just report it.
That's right.
Will you guys be, when you, we might already ask this, forgive me, coffee hasn't all the way kicked in yet. Are you guys going to be doing your physical copies in newsprint, or are you just going to give it the newsprint style on glossies?
I believe it's going to be on newsprint, but,
nice.
I got to double check, with Ray. He's the one working with the printer. Forget the paper stock we're using. I think we're doing on newsprint. I believe so.
That's cool. I think it's cool.
Super cool.
Derek, say some stuff or what?
So yeah.
Derek, yeah. Does anybody have anything else they want to say? Anything at all?
Have a great weekend. Be safe. Get a. I won't be too political, but get your shot. You know. Get vaccinated so we could go to comic conventions.
Oh, yes. There you go. If you need any other reason, you know, get it so you can go to Comic-Con and do all these other events that are local, support your local comic shops, all that good stuff. Support indie developers, everything. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
I'll jump in there with you. I will tell people to get vaccinated, too. I'm with you 100%.
Please, we want everyone healthy and well and enjoying comics.
Absolutely.
That's my wish to the world.
There you go.
Well, Jake, thanks so much for joining us here. Give Ray our thanks to everybody. Get Jake Cohen,
he's grinding at cons right now doing caricatures. He would love to be here. Maybe down the line we could do another one in tandem with him.
That'd be cool.
So yeah, man, it was great having you on. So thank you so much for coming on, and you know, actually thank you for sending us your work. I mean, it was crazy that you know people sent us their work and reached out, and you know, I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, thank you for you know giving us that chance to read your work, interview you, all that.
So and you're the first interviewee on the Weekly Pulls with all three of us. I've only ever done one other interview, so like this is I'm gonna call this the first official one. This is pretty cool, man.
Well, I'm quite flattered. I guess I deflowered all of you guys. Like this
Saturday morning. I think you're Derek.
I don't
second,
like that terminology.
But...
I don't like that terminology at all.
I don't care. I have my flowers.
Frogs. I don't know. I took your maidenhood.
I liked being a maiden.
Iron Maiden.
The pleasure is all mine, guys. Anytime you get,
and then you said pleasure.
Jake Cohen, funny things, Tales on Twitter. Everybody, get on it.